Our daf today, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh on Masechet Shabbat, is daf Kuf Mem, and we had just finished yesterday's sugya about food coloring on Shabbos. I was talking about the question of putting the egg through the strainer with the chardal, and we move on to other inyanim that have to do with chardal and with other types of things like that. And one of these problems is, of course, lishat. And what we do with the chardal is we take the mustard seed and then we mix it with all kinds of, take a look at the ingredients on your mustard bottle. So all kinds of things. And that is a problem of lisha if you do that on Shabbos itself. However, in the event that was chardal shelosho me'erev Shabbat, so you had already basically, you had squished the whole thing together. It's some machlokas over here. Are we talking about that this was squished on its own with its own internal juices, or you poured something else into it? And also the issue of lisha is a major, one very major question, which comes up lahalacha all the time, is whether you have a problem of actually just adding new liquid to something which has no liquid in it, and you don't mix, whether the addition of the liquid itself is considered to be part of the lisha process, and therefore would be mechayev you. But that would make the nafkamina over here, whether we're talking about just that it had already been crushed in its own juice, or you had already mixed something in it. But in any event, if you did the beginnings of what would normally be considered lisha before Shabbos, and now you want to add things into it, so the next day on Shabbos, Amarav Mimachobikli, you can actually mix it. However, do not do that by hand. Do it by using a spoon. Now, this is a little bit funny because as Shmuel is going to point out in a minute, I mean, people don't usually use their hand. People usually use a spoon, don't they? But Rav is interestingly focusing on what is the better way to do things, not what is the normal way to do things. So therefore, Rav is saying, look, the better way to achieve a real lisha of mustard is to use your fingers. And that way you're able to squish it around and so on. And okay, that's not very pleasant to look at, you know, somebody doing that. You sure hope he washed his hands well. But when you see chefs doing that, you hopefully with a glove, but you know why they're not using a cleat. But Shmuel says, on the other hand, look, he says to Rav, what are you talking about, biyad? You think that everyday normal people mix things biyad just because it's better to do it that way? I guarantee you they use a little hand mixer. They don't use their hand. So what is this, machal chamorimu? I mean, who are we making this for, the donkey? This is supposed to be fed to your guests, you know. They don't know you think they're donkeys. So therefore, if you're going to make a change, make the change from the way that you do it. Don't make the change in terms of what's theoretically better, because the shinoi is to make it clear that you're not doing something the way you do it b'chol. Therefore, elam ha'shmul, on the contrary, you mix it today, you mix it with your hand, which you normally wouldn't do, and don't use the regular kli that you would use. Itma, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, I hold you can't mix it at all. Echad zeh v'echad zeh usur, you're not allowed to mix, not with your hand and not with a cleat. Rabbi Yochanan says you can do it either way, actually. Echad zeh v'echad zeh mutter. Okay, so now we have three shitot. According to Rabbi Elazar, there's no way that you'd be allowed to add on Shabbos. You'd have to make your mustard before Shabbos. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it doesn't matter to make a shinui, because basically, no matter what you do, if you do it by hand, you're doing a better job. If you do it with a regular kli, then you're doing the normal job. And we didn't answer it, and therefore it would be mutter either way. And then you have the machlokas Rav and Shmuel, which are two other shitas, as to what the shinui ought to be, from efficiency to inefficiency, or from normal to non-standard. So four different shitas. In the end, Rabbi Yochanan took the view of Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar persuaded him that actually both of them should be aser. But by then, Rabbi Elazar changed his mind, and he ended up agreeing with Shmuel that you would be allowed to make a shinoi, but it would be the type of shinoi that would be from the norm, so that you can't use a kli, you can only use a yad. And then once Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind, so then Abaye and Rava said, so the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, actually. Not like we said before, because we hold it's usur. in either way. Now, actually, Abaya's mommy or nanny was she once tried making him mustard like this on Shabbos, and he refused to eat it. So he held that it was actually usher to eat if it was done for him, because you went ahead and you were mechallel Shabbos. You shouldn't have done that. And that he held that if it was done for you, then it's usher as the meisim of Shabbos or usher. Devita de Ziri, Ziri's wife, she went ahead and made some for Reb Chiya Bar Ashi, who was a Talmud of Ziri, and he refused to eat it. So she said to him, well, it's always like that. The Talmidim always become more frum than the Rebbe, of course. The Rab Chavi, I did it for your Rebbe, and he ate it fine. But for you, it's not good enough, right? V'at lo achalt, Omar Rava Bar Shva, havekaim na kameder of Ina. Once I was in front of Ravina, I helped preparing his table for him, and I went ahead and I made a really big shinui. What I did is I took a clove of garlic and I used the garlic to mix it. And then he ate it. And actually, Omar Marzuta, really we don't paskin like any of the simple ways that we stated above. Doesn't mean necessarily that it's mamish kineged all of the shitas, but it's with an additional point that we hadn't actually taken up before. So in a sense, it looks like it's against everything we said before. It goes really according to this. And this is, it sounds the same, but we'll see that it's a little bit different. And that is that chardal shalosho me'erev Shabbos, l'mocher me'macho bein b'yad bein b'kli. And you can add different things into it. You can put in honey in it. But the point is to be gentle. So don't be toreif. If you're not toreif, toreif is basically what you do when you're mixing an egg, you know? So it's like very hard mixing. And that is much more similar to lisha. So basically what we're saying is you can't do it the way you would normally do it in terms of both the kli, the tool that you use, and also the way that you're doing it, because instead what you're doing is stirring. And stirring is not really the same as kneading. So that kneading is much more powerful, and because of that, you've changed completely the derech that it's done b'chol. Now, another thing is they used to make, like today, pesta is very common. They didn't use pesta, they used kress, which were shachalayim, but it was the same basic idea, same kind of sharp taste. And if you chopped it up before Shabbos, then you can add your vinegar and your oil to it, and you can add mint into it, mamshich l'toch haramita. But again, do not really give it a powerful mix. Mix it gently, meaning just stir it with a spoon. And that way, even though it doesn't mix as well, it's not the same as lisha. How about if you add ground up garlic from before Shabbos? So the next day you can go ahead, you can add beans into it or split beans, but you again, don't bang on it. If you bang on it, if you pound it, so then you'll be over, in this case, not on lisha, but you'll be over on tchina. Umamshichat amita letocha. And you said before you're allowed to add amita. What exactly is amita? It is minta, meninya. Omer Abaye Shmamina. Oh, just one of the important things to learn from the Gemara, says Abaye. Your best recipes should really be coming from the Gemara. And so mark this down, please. Mint is good for kress. Okay? You got that. So I'm Shmamina. You have a very important halacha from here that adding mint to a dish of kress is definitely. Now, you wouldn't think so on the surface. Try it out and you'll see that it's delicious. Okay, let mine de lo remiza be oraita. I'm going to talk a little bit later about what the heck all of this is doing here. And because, I mean, we seem to have lost our direction. Everything was going fine, you know? And even Reb Elazar de Mila, we understood how that got there because we were talking about the union of the three-pronged Gzeirah Shavah, which actually puts Shabbos and Mila together in terms of the way that the Torah refers to it. So it's Ot, and it's Brit, and it's Dorotechem. So we understood that, and that got us into the question of Machshirin, which was like, okay, so that brought us a little bit into the questions of Refuah and how to do it, and then we went to the Machshirin in terms of Machshirin with Ochel Nefesh. It's pretty far-fetched, but maybe because it's Reb Eliezer. Okay, but now we seem to have just lost our way. I mean, what are we talking about mustard for all of a sudden? Are we really moving on to the dinner of Lisha? No, that becomes quite evident as we go. And we're going to move on right now, as the Mishnah says, to something completely different. Can you make an Inom Lin on Shabbos? We don't know exactly what the Inom Lin is, but again, being as we seem to be in your chef for the day, Gemara, so now we're going to learn out how to make a good Inom Lin. Okay. Also strange. So turn around, no sinim in olim b'Shabbat. You can make an olim, but you can't make an olim. Right? Well, how do you make one and how do you make the other? Well, an inomalin that you're allowed to make, that's made out of yayin and dvash and pilpulin. So you got wine mixed with honey and pepper, but an aluntin, that's made out of this old wine. Old wine, the Gemara said elsewhere, was 2 years. And mayim tzululim has very clear water and balsam. Now, that is made for the purposes of avdi lavei mesuta lameka. That's somebody who's got a little bit of a heat stroke by spending too long in the shvitz, you know. And when he comes out of the Beit HaMerchatz, so you give him this as a restorative, which means that it's something related to a type of refuah. And because of that, we said you shouldn't make it on Shabbos, our old gezera of shrikat samamanim. Omer of Yosef, I once went with Mark Ukva into a bath. Oh, my God, I got to tell you. I don't know how he handles it, but I can tell you, when I came out, he brought me one cup. Take out the word chamra because it doesn't make any sense. We're talking about the aluntit, and indeed, as you can see, the mefarshim take out the chamra. So he gave me one cup of this stuff to drink. I got chilled from the top of my head down to the tippy toes of my toes. And I can tell you, if I would have had one more cup of that stuff, it would have been the end. Ashken Kasach Rina, if he would have given me another cup, I would have been frightened that at that point I lose my Olam Haba. There's two approaches in this. Either because, oh, was that great? And, you know, that much pleasure should be reserved for Olam Haba. Or the other pshat is, I would have probably died of heart failure, and if I survived it, it must be because it was a miracle and it took it off of my Olam Haba. But whatever the pshat is, thank heavens he didn't give me another cup. Whew, it's dangerous to go with Mar Ukva. What do you mean? Mar Ukva drinks this stuff every single day. Nothing ever happens to him. I mean, what's the pshat? No, Mar Ukva. Marukva's got high tolerance for this. He's used to it, you know. I mean, so he's built up. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, did you ever watch the Talisker Rebbe drink Talisker? You know, I mean, you try it, you know. So over a period of time, you can get used to this stuff. Okay, Talisker Rebbe, give it to us.
I should have started off this morning, as you can see my voice.
Yes, yes, but I can tell you where I hid the Talisker in my room if you want.
Mint tea for you both.
It'll take a while.
Ein shorin et achiltit beposhrin. Okay, another strange thing that we need to learn about is don't soak achiltit in warm water on Shabbos. Now, okay, exactly what achiltit is, Dr. Felix says in his little book over there on the things in the Mishnah, that it is asafotida, and that's a type of resin. So it's like a little chunk of resinous material. If you put it into warm water, some of it gets into the water, but you can put it into vinegar and then use it as dip, because then it's clearly not a medicine. It's rather a veggie dip. Ve'en sholina tarkarshinin. When it comes to feeding your animal, you want to get some of that dirt out of the karshinim. So what usually you do during the week, if it's particularly dirty animal feed and the animal's uncomfortable eating it, so you pour water in the trough. That causes all of the dirt to rise to the surface. And then you just float it away. You just pour in more water until you get it all out of there. But you can't do that on Shabbos because it's a form of beirer. V'lo shafinotonu, you can't rub them to get off the dirt from him. Avo noten l'toch ha-kivara, l'toch ha-kalkala. Look, it doesn't mean that you have to be very careful in how you transport them or keep them. You can even put them in the type of kli which is normally used for beer. You put it into a sifter, a sieve, or whatever, or into a basket, one of those kind of Egyptian baskets we spoke about as being something that is the way that you would put wine through. Over here, you're not doing it for that purpose. You're just transporting it. So you're just going to say, great, but as I move it, I mean, certainly some of the stuff is going to get filtered, isn't it? Yes, but that's not the way that you would normally filter moving something from one place to another. So it's okay. You could put it in there. Ein kovrim et ha-teven b'kevara. Now, you cannot take this chopped up straw and sift it using a sifter. Nor can you put it in such a way that the wind is going to blow over. You put it on a rock, on an incline. And that way, the motes will gradually drop away. The chaff is going to be blown away, and then gravity will attract it. And then basically, you've achieved the same thing. But you could take it in a sifter, notelo bichavara, and pour it from the sifter into the evos, into the feeding thing, the trough. And that way, you may have achieved a little bit of cleaning, but that's certainly not the normal way of doing it, even if a little bit will fall through the holes. Iboilu. So getting back to the asafotida, the chiltis, what if you did do that? What if you put it into warm water? So what would be the din? Is that an issur d'oraisa, or is that an issur d'rabbanan? Shmueli's background is awfully exciting. It leads me to believe that he's hiding his father behind an electronic background. Now, what's the real story? Aha! I knew it. The ghost suddenly appears in the picture. Yes, there we go. Aha, okay. Virtual Akivas, huh? But I like the real background. Okay, so
Rabbi Rashi says that this is according to Rabbi Shimon because it's Lof Hashem Sifra Gufa. Do we have to go that way, or is there another way to allow it?
To allow it?
Yeah, the fact that you can take it big for Rashi.
Excuse me, I can't follow the Barnea warps when we're already in the next Mishnah, and you bring up some. I had no idea what you were talking about. Okay. Yes, so the Rambam also says that it's not considered to be I wish you had brought it up before, but yes, it's not considered to be obsecration. Iboilu, shora mai. So if you did it, what would be the din? So Rav Adonar Shah said, and Rav Yosef was standing there, he said to him, shora, you actually chayav achatas. And as usual, Abaye is really shocked by these kind of machmirim and brings a comparison to something that it really isn't comparable to, but he's just trying to say, I mean, it's just as crazy as saying X or Y, even though, I mean, we can easily distinguish those cases from the case that's mentioned. So Omerle Abaye, you're telling me that if you take some meat, you know, raw meat, and you put it into water, so you're going to be chayav achatas? I mean, what the heck is the difference between that and between achiltis? Ela Omer Abaye, the whole thing is drabbanan, and once again, as I asserted before, what we're looking at is changes from the derech she'oseh b'chol. So we have something of a theme here of issues that need to be changed because of uvde d'chol. Now, the Mishnah says you can't put it into hot water, warm water, right? Are you allowed to put it into cold water? So he said, no, it's usher. So, which, I mean, the Mishnah said, dafken techanim, right? So Rabbi Yochanan asked him, well, I mean, it says that you can't put it into warm water, into poshrin. Isn't that mashma that you can put it into cold? Said Rabbi Yochanan, listen here, buddy. Did you come and ask me a question, you know? And now you've got a chip on your shoulder. You're telling me, oh, what are you going to do with the Mishnah? I mean, if you don't think there's any difference between me and you, because I'm a lot smarter than you are, and that's why you came to me, and I'm a bigger Talmud Chacham. So what are you coming over here and at? You want to ask nicely, how does Rebbe explain the Mishnah? Fine. That's fine. If you want to come at me with a kasha from a Mishnah, like a two-year-old, then you shouldn't have asked me the question in the first place. I mean, what's the difference between me and you then? What do you think we are, kindergarten fellows? You want to ask me the Mishnah, I'll explain the Mishnah to you. The Mishnah is actually a Das Yochi. And that's why I told you we don't pay attention to this Mishnah. And I'll prove it to you. D'tanya. Ein shorina tachilti t'lo b'chamin v'lo b'tzonein. Feirish, okay? So the Tanakhama over here, it's the Das of the Chachomim, said, you are not allowed to put that chiltit into, even into cold water. It's only Rabbi Yossi who said, no, it's only Ozer B'Charmin, but Betzonein, it's Mutter, which means that the Das Rabim is actually the Chachomim and not like the Das Yochid of our Mishnah. What exactly do you make this chiltis for? The asafoetida. What do you use it for? You're saying it's a type of medicine, unless you're mixing it with vinegar and stuff. Lamai avdile liyukra deliba. So it's good for cardiac insufficiency. Rav Acha bar Yosef chash biyukra deliba. Actually, Rav Acha bar Yosef had that problem, and he came to Mar Ukva, and Mar Ukva, he told him, okay, you should drink 3 tikle chiltata betlata yume. You should, over the course of the next 3 days, you should drink 3 dinarim worth. This doesn't mean a silver dinarim, it's a gold dinar, otherwise it would be an awful lot of this stuff over the course of the next 3 days. So it was Thursday, and he drank it on Thursday. He drank it on Friday, and then he wasn't sure whether he was allowed to drink it on Shabbos, because you're not supposed to take medicine on Shabbos. So he went to the Beis HaMedrash on Shabbos morning, and he asked whether he's allowed to take it on Shabbos. So they told him in the Beis HaMedrash that Tanei Devei Rabbi Ada, or some say it was Tanei Devei Mar Barav Ada, that a person can drink as much as he wants of this stuff on Shabbos, even a kav o kabayim ve'eno choshesh. That certainly you're allowed to drink it if you're allowed to drink it normally. Some normal pink people drink it. Marlo, I'm not talking about drinking it, man. I had no question about drinking. I know that you're allowed to drink it. The question over here, I wanted to know whether I'm allowed to make it to drink. So is that usher because of the uvda dechol similarity not to do it on Shabbos? Marlo, Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, I'll tell you that I had exactly this situation, you know, and she ill tailor Ravada Barava. So I went to ask Ravada Barava. He had no idea what the din was. So I came to Ravuna, and Ravuna said, listen, you're allowed to do it because you can soak it in cold water, which you're allowed to do, we said before, and then leave it out in the sun, and then it'll warm up in the sun, and then it'll become potrine, and then it'll be good. But so is that, he's saying, according to who? He's saying that only according to Rabbi Yossi, apparently, right? I mean, because you said it was only Rabbi Yossi, it was Matir the Tzonin, and that actually the Rabbanan answered even the Tzonin. And over here, he's allowing you to do it. Was that he was saying you can't do anything? No, of course not. That wouldn't be, he wouldn't be telling you I'll leave the Rabbi Yossi, because what good is it? We weren't pasking like Rabbi Yossi. He was saying, even according to the Tanakhama, who answers it, in a normal case, that's only if you haven't started on a course of medication. But if you already started, but now it's your third day that you want to continue your dosage. Once you took 2 doses of this stuff on Thursday and Friday, if you don't take the 3rd dose, you could actually worsen the heart. And ilo shati b'shabbat mistaken, it becomes an actual sakonas nefashas, and therefore you're allowed to do it according to anybody for sure. So Rav Acha bar Yosef, who was an old man at this point, he used to walk around with his nephew, Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak would support him and take him for walks, and they would talk and learning on the way and so on. So one time he tells him, you know, we're going to be walking by Rav Safra's house. Do me a favor and bring me in. So Kugmatina Levei Rav Safra Ailina. So when he comes in, he brings him into Rav Safra, and he leaves the room because, I mean, he was just the young nephew. So Rav Acha bar Yosef asks Rav Safra, I want to know what the din is, whether you're allowed to be mechaskes kitanita b'shabbat. Would you be allowed to rub a cleaned linen shirt between your hands? You rub it, and that makes it soft. Because after linen is washed and dries, spread out, it's very stiff. So are you allowed to rub it? And I mean, because there's 2 issues with the rubbing. I mean, one rubbing of it just makes it softer. There's no issue of making something softer on Shabbos. The problem is, though, that when you rub it, you also make it brighter. So that seems maybe to be part of the libun And I don't know why this is normally done. I mean, so the question is, what type of pu'ula is this? Is this more of a pu'ula of chol, which is part of the libun process, or is it just for the purposes of making it soft? So l'kuche kitnita kamechaven, which is mutter v'shapredami, odilma l'ulude chivara kamechaven v'aser. Where's the point over here? It makes it brighter, and that's like part of the libun process. So Rav Safra said to him, no, the point over here is l'kuche kitnita, it's for softening, and you're allowed to do it. So when Rav Acha ben Yosef came back out, so Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak, when he was walking him back, he said to him, so what did Rabbi say to Rav Safra? He said, I asked him what the din would be about kiskusi kitnita b'shabata. And he told me, yeah, it's okay. So Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak said, sure, it's such a shame. You should have asked him what the din is about the siddur that you put on your head. No, I didn't want to ask him about that. It wasn't any question to me, because I had already asked that question. And Rav Huna, to whom I asked it, he said that it's usur. So I don't get it. So if you already knew that it was usur from Rav Huna, then what made you think that this would be any different? I mean, you should have just assumed that if Rav Huna says that that was usur, that this would also be usur. Same thing, isn't it? It's rubbing the linen. So v'tiv shet leil amar misudra. You should have just figured from that that it's actually usur, not asked the shayla. Amar lei, no. Because there was no question. Once I understood that the main point over here of the sudr, I mean, that's something that you wear out, and it's like sort of like wearing a tie. People are much more makpid on getting their tie dirty than they would be on getting their shirt dirty. So I understand that the tie has got to be something that really looks nice. So over there, I understand that it's mirziki ludi chivra. The point over there, it's part of the cleaning process, right? But over here, in your clothes, it doesn't look so bad. Maybe over there we should say that that is just sort of a very small proportion byproduct, and the main issue is softening, which is not really important on your tie or on your turban. So achalo mirziki ludi chivra, and he agreed. And Rav Safra told me, and it's really mutter. Omer Rav Chista. Hi, katinata. Actually, these kind of linen shirts. So what you do is when you hang them up, they didn't use hangers that were pre-fashioned the way we do. Moshe's head seems to be sinking gradually beneath the Gemara, which makes me very suspicious. Why is it sinking? Maybe we should move the camera up a little so that we could keep track of your eyes. Okay. That's better. All right. So what they would do is they would take a piece of wood, a straight piece of wood that was going to be used really in the fireplace afterwards. They would put it through like a hanger and button the shirt around the piece of wood. So now comes Shabbos. Now the firewood is usur because it isn't miyuchat for a hanger. So therefore you should be careful to take the shirt off of the hanger, which is just like a plain piece of wood. I forgot the word for something that you're just using for that purpose. Ira, you going to help me again? It's a something that you just take and use for that. Yeah, no, quite, but close. All right. Fine. All right. Again, maybe makeshift is at least useful. So take it off of that, but don't take the hanger, so to speak, out of it because it's mutzah. Omar Rava, yeah, but I mean, sometimes you wouldn't use just a piece of wood. Sometimes you would use something that is a kli, like let's say kli kevai, what we had before, that the weaver for weaving, they had all of these different poles. And if it's one of those, then it's okay. But then you can even move the hanger because that is considered to be a kli. And over here, obviously, you're using it leheter. Omar Rav Chista, something else is if you got a kishta di yarka, so you got a bunch of the type of herbs that usually are only going to be used for, it's a question really what the girsa is, because in the Rambam it's a hutsa de yarka, which means, it's like, it smells bad, and it's not something that a person would generally move, and the issue would revolve around the idea of whether it's muktzamach, was muse. So if it's usable for your animal, then it's shari little too late, but if not, then it really is not something that is allowed to be moved at all. Omar Rav Chia bar Ashi, Omar Rav, Hitalia de Bisra, Charlotte Tully, speaking of various things that are like not very pleasant over time. So you took meat, you hung it up, which is often done even today. So you have this meat that is drying to make, let's say, salamis, and it dries in the sun. So you tie them with a string and you hang them up, right? So that type of thing is allowed to be moved because the salamis that you make on it, you could eat on Shabbos. But if it's fish and it's raw fish, that is not eaten just raw like that. And therefore, you shouldn't move it. Okay, not everybody agrees with this. And actually, many shittas hold that we're talking about, again, mo'us, not the shaila of whether it's roy to be eaten directly. And it's the reason that it would be mo'us, disgusting, is because if it's used often to tie meat on, it doesn't get disgusting. But if you use it to tie fish on, then it does get disgusting. Amar of Katina. Now, we're going to have a lot of issues over here. Some learn that it's the Girsa is Amar of Chista, Amar of Katina. That way, it would explain why we bring all of the Mamorim of Chista and of Katina. And these, again, appear to be a bunch of things that have absolutely nothing to do with any of the sugyas that we're talking about, other than the names of the people, which is very strange. And as I said, we haven't really been able to figure out what it is that we're talking about, because I mean, we're just sort of jumping from thing to thing. We haven't really found a clear-cut topic. So that from Reb Eliezer de Mila, the Masechet seems to have lost its way. And we're going to see that this continues on until the end of the Masechet, in a sense. That we move away from the general theoretical discussion, the conceptual discussions. What consists of this malacha? What does this malacha consist of? And what does a rishus consist of? And these were categories in which the Masechet was really one of the most powerful structured Masechetot, simply because of the lametes malachas. I mean, you only have four aveis when you're talking about the aveis and the zikin, you know, or 16 or whatever, but you certainly don't get to, 39 different sets of malachas that have to be clearly. So it was a highly structured and scientific-like Masechet. All of a sudden, like from Reb Eliezer de Mila, we just sort of seem to be fluffing around without any clear-cut topic that we're giving a Hagadorah to. So we're going to have to figure out why that's true. And it gets worse now. So if Katina says, if you're going to stand in the middle, or Omeid just doesn't mean literally standing, if you're standing or you're sitting in the middle of a bed of people who are married, then you're not allowed to do that. It's as if you're standing on the stomach of the wife. Because, you'll invariably think about this being a conjugal bed and you'll start thinking about her. But actually, come on. Lav milta hi. I mean, what are we talking about? Playboys over here. The Omer of Chista, Bar Bei Rav. Now, so a Bar Bei Rav is a new Talmud Chacham. Usually it means a guy who's in yeshiva. He doesn't have any money. And he gets this small allowance. He's got to be very careful how to use his money. So I'm going to give him some practical advice, how to get a good deal. As you know, machers. The machers are part of the yeshiva syndrome. So you try always to get a good deal. You know, switch from one credit card to another, and meanwhile get a 1%, and God only knows. Okay. So this is still the kind of thing being done. So in terms of, like, how do you make your money go further when you don't have any money? So what you can do is, if you're going to buy a bunch of veggies, let me explain to you how they make a bunch of veggies, okay? They cut the strings that they make the bunch of veggies with in advance. They're all cut to exactly the same length, okay? So when they tie the veggies, the only difference between one bunch and another bunch is the length of the vegetables in it. So be smart. Look at the longest bunch, because you're going to pay the same amount. So Bar Bei Rav Dezav and Yarkat, buy a long bunch, because the deal is that the kisha ki kisha, each bunch is exactly like any other in terms of how thick it is, because they use the same string. But urcha memela, any additional length, that's your extra deal, you know? Same thing is true if you're buying fuel in terms of wood. So you're being zoving kanya, you're buying reeds. Look at the longest one, because the same thing. Each one is as thick as the other, tuna ki tuna, and the urka is additional value. The armor of Chista, a Bar Bei Rav, look, a guy, who does not really have any bread or doesn't have much bread, then don't eat the kind of veggies that really get your appetite up, because you don't have anything to eat it with, and the veggies themselves are not going to make you happy. So this, Rashi says, refers to those kind of things. Again, we're talking about like before, like pesto. You can't really eat just plain pesto, you know? And if you do, you're going to feel like you need to have something to have with it, and you don't have anything. I can tell you that when I was poor, I didn't eat any of that stuff. So I didn't eat veggies. And when I got rich, I didn't either. I'll tell you why. When I was poor, I figured it's just going to make me even more hungry. So what's the point? And then when I got rich, I said, you know, there's only so much room in my tummy. So instead of filling it up with all of those veggies, I can afford to fill it up with meat and with fish and with butter. And, you know, that's great. And as you know, that's much more healthy than veggies. Now, that does run a little bit against advice of your nutritionist. However, I would point out to you the latest in nutrition. Remember, we are learning today's Gemara is about recipes, nutrition, and so on. Now, this was the book of the year by the BBC. BBC, Wall Street Journal. Yes, what is it's in Barnea's neighborhood, apparently.
In the bibliography, I have it. It's in the fat book.
Okay. Very good. So anyway, this is the Wall Street Journal, BBC, British Medical Association, British Medical Journal, and it's actually consistent with this Gemara. Instead of all those veggies, let meat and fish enter instead. Okay.
If it's grass-fed.
And he actually recommends a nice fat chullet. The Amr of Chizta. Bar Beirav, de lo nefishe le rifta lo livitza bats ui. If you don't have a lot of bread, you think what you're going to do is you're going to chop it up into little pieces, and then you'll have it like spread out over the day, and that's better. No, that's not better, because then you'll never have a single meal that's going to satisfy you. So lo livitza bats ui, do not do that. And another thing that Rav Chizta said, that if you don't have a lot of bread, then you should not be the one that makes the bracha on the bread and hands it out to other people, because you're too stingy. So they should not appoint you to be, it's like taking a Holocaust survivor, you know, and he's just out of Europe, and you're going to be mechabed him with saying the bracha and handing out the challah, you know, and he's going to cut like a tenth of a slice for each person, you know, because that's like inconceivable for him to eat any more than that. So this is the wrong guy to be doing the breaking of the bread, you know? And the reason for this is, he cannot bring himself to give out big pieces. The Omer of Chizta, I can tell you that when I was poor, originally Lohavi Batsana, and I would never be the one to break the bread, so to speak, I needed to psychologically feel. And I knew this. So before I would actually make the bracha, I would look through the whole basket to make sure there was tons of bread there, enough for me to reassure myself that I'm not starving. And that way I could psychologically accommodate myself to being botseya with an ayin yofa. These kinds of experiences leave their mark on a person for life. It's very, very difficult to get out of it. And, I got to tell you, my father-in-law, Zatzal, actually went through that whole experience, and he could not leave the house without carrying around bread with him. That's how frightening it was to be in a matzav of starvation. And the amazing thing is, he once saved my life. I was traveling with my wife. This was like, 50 years ago. And there was this airline strike. It was like a crazy thing. And we were sitting there. We had traveled from Toronto. We had arrived in what did they used to call that small airport in New York? LaGuardia. I don't know if they still call it. Maybe it's still LaGuardia. And there was nothing that you could do. You couldn't get it. We were waiting like for this next flight. and nothing was coming. We hadn't eaten all day. There was no kosher food. We were literally about to faint from starvation, and all of a sudden we see, without having planned it in advance, there goes my father-in-law walking down between his flights, and we go running, and sure enough, of course, he was carrying a bunch of bread, and so we had plenty to eat. Of course, he wouldn't give it all to us, but we had enough to eat. So good. So this is exactly what the Gemara is referring to. The Omer of Chista, Ayman, the Efshalei, Lamechel, the Hamad, the Sa'ari. Now look, you got these guys that don't have any money, you know? And they could buy some, you know, cheap barley bread, and instead they go for this expensive French bread. I mean, man, that's baltashkes. You can't do that. The Omer of Papa, I'm on the Efshel Mishtei Shichra. I can tell you something else, says Rav Papa. Now, do not suspect me of having any financial interest in this Psak Halacha. I mean, I guess it's only fair for you to know that I am a famous beer manufacturer. But I can tell you one thing, that anybody who could drink beer and is stupid enough to drink wine is wasting his money. And he's being over on Baltashkes. And that was not a paid political announcement, okay? But all of this is not true. It's definitely not true. It's actually perfectly okay to spend your money on better quality food, because baltashkes is the gufa adif. It's worse to do things that are bad for your body than to do things that are worse for your money. The Omer of Chista, Barbe Rav de Les Le Mishkan. I remember in those days Yaakov, it's wonderful to have you, but you should mute yourself. So, Yaakov Kleiman, do you know how to mute yourself? Maybe not. Okay, I shall help you. All right. So, what they used to do in those days, remember, is they had a little bit of olive oil, would wash their fingers after the meal, before you did Mayim Achronim, to get off any fats that were on your fingers. But suppose you can't afford any of that expensive olive oil. Well, what you can do is nimshe b'maya d'charitze. You know that oily substance that sort of gathers on top of algae-filled waters that have been lying around? Use that, and then afterwards you wash mayim achronim, you wash that water off. The Omer of Chista, barbe rav d'zavin umtza. If you finally got together enough money to buy a little piece of meat, what you should buy is a piece of the meat in the neck, because that way at least you'll get three different types of tastes, because there are soft meat there, and there's a thicker meat, and then there's the sinews, and that gives you three different tastes. So what the heck? Make your money go further. The Omer of Chista, another thing about Talmidei Chachamim. Now, of course, I may have some financial interests in this, but nobody has to know about them. So what I would say is, if you are in the market for buying a linen shirt, there's only one place to buy a linen shirt. Buy that linen from Nahar Abba and clean it once every 30 days. And that way it will last you for a full 12 months. You will not need another linen shirt. And I personally guarantee it. Va'ana Arva. Again, don't ask about my financial interests here. As a matter of fact, that word, kitunita, that's sort of a fancy kind of word, isn't it? What would kitunita mean? It stands for kitana'a. It makes you a member of the polo club, so that if you want to get into high society, wear yourself one of my very special kitunitas made out of linen from Nahar Abba. The Omer of Chista. Barbe Rav, Lolete Vatsipta Chadata. Again, one of these guys, we're talking about all these Barbe Ravs that are Yeshiva Bochum, they don't have any money. Do not ever sit on a new mat, because it's going to wear out your pants, the Mechal Yamane. It's damp and it's got these sharp edges. The last thing you want to do, be careful what you're sitting on. I told you about my old Chavrusa and Mir, before he would sit down on this guy was incredibly poor. And before he would sit down on the bench, he would be very careful to lay down a little piece of cloth on the bench, because he said that the wood makes his pants get ruined faster and he can't afford another pant. So he would always sit on a pin and carefully spread it out and then sit down. So, yeah, you better make sure you don't sit on a mat. Do not send your underwear to your hostess. They used to have, remember, kes. So you, every bocher, they didn't have dormitories. You would stay at somebody's house. So you figure, okay, she gives you all the food and everything. She takes care of your bedding. Don't send her your underwear, because if she sees any stains on it, she will look down on you. Now we've got more exciting. Now for the first time, we got a little bit of sex education over here. If you want to tell your daughter how it is she should deal with her husband, so before you get married, he would tell his daughters, listen, first of all, don't eat in front of your husbands. You may be really turn them off by the way you eat and eat too much or whatever. Furthermore, do not eat veggies at night, and do not eat dates at night, and don't drink beer at night. You don't want flatulence. Do not use the same place to go to the bathroom outdoors where your husbands are. It will turn them off. Whenever somebody knocks on the door, never say who's there using the masculine. So don't say Manu, who's there. Say Mani, who's there, meaning what woman is there, because you should not be in a matzav in which you're talking to men. Pretend it's a woman. And then, look, I got to tell you, I'm trying to say this as nicely as possible, okay? But give him the pearls in one hand and keep the oven in the other. And then you can give him the pearls, which is referring to your breasts. I mean, he wants to have some fun with your breasts. Fine, let him. But don't let him in until he's really hard up. Then, hadar achvila, then you can let him in because you want him to really enjoy. Okay. Ein sholina takarshinin. The next thing in the Mishnah we had is don't float away the dirt that was on top of your animal feet. And Masiz of the Loki Haitana, which apparently is not going according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says, the Mishnah continued over there to say you can use a kavara and it's not a problem as long as you're just holding it in the kavara. Ein mashgichin bekavara kol ikar. You cannot use any type of sifter at all. You're not even to put it into. So, okay, what in the world? As you can see, this is sort of a very serious mix of inyanim that doesn't seem to follow directly from anything. So I'm going to just challenge you to think about the change that the Masechet has undergone from the point of Rabbi Eliezer de Mila. And we understood Rabbi Eliezer de Mila. And as I pointed out to you earlier, once we went from Shabbos into Mila, we started dealing with all kinds of different issues that were only peripherally related to Shabbos because of the bris of Shabbos and the oaths of Shabbos and the dorotechem of Shabbos. So what I would like you to think about is the way that Rabbi Eliezer de Mila gets us into the down and dirty of humanity. And it's from there what we've been talking about. Even Mila itself, even the details of Mila itself are very down and dirty, similar to the issues of the dam of Korban Pesach and B'damai Chayi and the whole question of dam Mila and dam Pesach being misarvim ba'adari, the Kohanim walking up to their karsulayim in blood and so on. And these were things I think Gavi and Moshe had been working on in terms of Pesach. But really the turn from the Masechet from that point has been into exactly what you would expect. Because really what Mila is, as the Rishonim explain, is you're taking the first responsibility for the furthering of human evolution, right? So in other words, we deal with biology, but then we deal with the functions in biology that we have some control of, and that's choosing where to put our genes and choosing basically how it is that we want our bodies to develop and to look. And this is the inyan of taking Maisa Bereshis. That's why it's Yom HaShmini, as Maral explains. This is the taking of creation one step further. It's Asher Bara Elohim La'asot. From this point on in the Masechet, instead of looking at the contents of a structured Melacha orientation, what we begin looking at is the way in which people live and interact. And that has to do with uvdot. uvda decho, the way that you do things. And that's not only the question of the way that you do things on Shabbos. It's the way that you do things as human beings. And we're going to see that there's so many Mishnayos, you know, what to say to Chavero, can you tell someone, it's a strange way of saying things, can you tell someone, wait for me after Shabbos? You know, can a person tell a friend? I mean, just tell me the dins. What do you mean a person telling? Why is it always brought down to the human level? What happens if you find tefillin? What do you mean, what happens if you find tefillin? Just tell me what the din is. Are tefillin movable on Shabbos or not? Every single din from this point on has to do with what happens if. And whether it's talking about what happens if you make that mustard. But that's because you got to have mustard with your food on Shabbos and so on, right? So, I mean, so what do you do if you don't have enough money to make it go further? And who is the guy that ought to be doing the bracha on the chalas and all kinds of stuff like this? And is it appropriate to buy wine if you can afford only beer and all these type of inyanim? Which brings us down specifically, not to the Talmud Chacham, but to the Bar Bei Rav. The Bar Bei Rav being the newcomer, the guy who's just starting to actually grow. And you remember the sugya that we had before also about the Tzurba Mirabbanan, you know? Rebbe, this Tzurba Mirabbanan, look how he's acting, and he went to sleep on the ferry, and he pretended he only wanted to go to sleep, and he stuck a clove of barley up inside the barrel. And so this is the question. What is suitable for Bar Bei Rav as opposed to other people? These are a bunch of stories. What I did in front of so-and-so. What did so-and-so tell me? These are so unique in the formation of the halachas. Take a look at the way that everything is presented as opposed to the earlier part of the Masechet. And think about that. And let's try to work out a deeper understanding of where it is that Shabbos, which is all about Maaseh Bereishis and moving on to a Gan Eden and a post-Gan Eden reality, which is very down and dirty. So from the beginning of the Os and the Bris, particularly in terms of Doroteichem, which is so much part of this whole idea of Sifro Shel Adam Harishon and the Doros to come, how the Masechet continues its stress on the nature of Adam, Adam's relationship to Behema, Adam's relationship to each other, Adam's relationship to self, and the way in which your down and dirty humanity has to learn to deal with a very down and dirty reality. So anyway, keep that in mind as we go through. Let's try to get a better sense of the Masechet. Meanwhile, I get an opportunity to wish all of you wonderful people a fantastic Shabbat Shalom. Kol Tov, everyone. Thank you.